Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
This hour is being brought to you by Way Back In. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. We had a wonderful conversation with Ed Howard in the first hour, along with a conversation with my buddy Michael Kim. I'm really excited to talk with our guest right now. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from in Melrose Park, alpamonteford.com. The president of baseball operations for your Chicago Cubs is Theo Epstein. He joins me now here on The Score. Theo, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, Lawrence. Thanks for having me on. It's been a while. How have you been?
I've been well. How's your son's golf swing?
It's good. He's just getting back out on the course and things opening up, but he still enjoys that and a lot of other sports too. Thanks for asking.
Thank you for being on the show. What's been the biggest challenge of running a baseball operation during a pandemic?
It's shifted. You know, early on it was just obviously immediate concern for everyone's health and safety and the welfare of their families. So, you know, we had scouts out on the road. We had hundreds and hundreds of players in spring training, count minor league camp, and we had to, you know, assess the situation, get scouts home safely, decide what we needed to do at camp to keep everyone safe, get everyone home, and then, you know, keep running the business and stay in communication with one another, making those adjustments that we all had to make, learning how to Zoom and whatnot, while getting new information every day. You know, it's an unusual situation where there was just the only thing we knew for certain is that we didn't know anything. And so trying to make good decisions without any visibility into the future is tough in any industry.
What were those last couple of days like before baseball had kind of decided that you were going to shut spring training down?
It was surreal, you know, because we're following the news. I think, you know, we all feel like we have some basic working knowledge of pandemics now, just because we're reading the newspaper and watching the news. But those are in the early days, we're all getting flooded with information. We're trying to keep up with what's real, what's not, what this might mean. And we're watching the real world impacts all around us. Seeing, you know, the NBA game, I think it was in Oklahoma City against Utah. I sat down and watching that on TV in my office, and we've got a spring training game going on, with 15,000 people showing up and trying to reconcile that, you know, where it looks like the country's about to shut down, but we're opening and playing, and we were supposed to host the game the next day too. And fortunately, we had some rain in the forecast. So we just, the first raindrop, we immediately canceled the game. And obviously, we're in communication with Major League Baseball, waiting for some league-wide direction. But it was very, very odd, you know, trying to decipher the information. And, you know, we're not public health experts, but at the time, so everyone had to try to make assessments of what was real and what wasn't. And you know, you quickly learn just to step back, follow the experts, follow the science, and make good fact-based decisions, even at a time when maybe the government wasn't necessarily doing that yet.
logistically it must have been a nightmare. Even just the idea of where are the players at and where are they going to stay over the next few weeks?
Yeah, getting them home was a big task, and we're lucky to have the best traveling secretary in the business, in my opinion, and DJ Texandani, and a really caring guy, and he's really dialed in with the family, so he was able to really help out. But the players had so many questions, and we didn't have any answers. And that's not a comfortable position to be in, you know, when you have people who are, you know, out interacting with the public for their jobs and in the normal course of business, exposing themselves to a lot of risk, and we don't have answers for them. We had a lot of players with pregnant wives, and no clarity at all about how long we're going to be shut down. Initially, it was just 2 weeks. You remember that opening day was pushed back just a couple of weeks, so players mm-hmm. weren't sure whether to stick around or to go home. So, looking back now, it seems like we all should have known this was going to be months and months and months. But even the experts at that time didn't have much clarity about what the future would look like. So, you learn lessons quickly in that situation. Just try to, don't pretend to know what you don't know. Be extremely transparent with the players. Lean into the communication, and then just rely on the science as best as you can to make decisions.
If there is baseball, what do you think it looks like for the near future?
We're all hopeful and confident that we'll have a season. What it looks like in terms of structure and format will obviously depend on the result of these negotiations that we hope end as soon as possible, and we can all transition into playing. But as far as what it'll look like, I think we all have to prepare, and fans have to prepare for it to look a little bit different, the way almost everything is going to look a little bit different. And players are going to be wearing masks at all times, except when they're on the field. They're going to be socially distanced. Even in the dugout, there's not going to be as much time spent indoors preparing for games. There's going to be some things that they – simple things that you're used to seeing on the field that they're not going to be able to do. But I think the right perspective to take on it, and something that we're all learning to do in almost every aspect of our life, is to maybe not compare it to what we've been used to, because that's a losing proposition, and you end up seeing the negatives if you do that, if you play that game and mentally. And instead to look at it as, an opportunity to craft something new in a difficult time, craft something that will have won't be the same, but will have meaning and substance and will resonate with a lot of people in an important way, and to sort of embrace the new challenging landscape and try to make something beautiful out of it. And I think that's what the players are going to do, and hopefully the whole institution of baseball can do, and put on a really good product for the fans, because they certainly deserve it. This is the most challenging year probably most of us have been through. So to be able to deliver something redeeming for people would be something that we're all proud of.
Theo, I know you take a lot of pride in the relationship that you build with players. Obviously, you're the president of the Cubs, so there's the connection to ownership as well. How does one go about straddling the line when there's negotiations like this going on, where it can sometimes look contentious for those of us that are looking at it from the outside? How do you have to walk that line?
That's a good question. During negotiations like this, and they usually take place out of the spotlight. Right now, everyone is unfortunately getting a look at how the sausage is made, and it's not always pretty, especially in this case. So it's unfortunate. We wish we were just focusing on playing ball. But when those types of negotiations happen, it's really, it's a select group at the commissioner's office and the upper tier of the union and their player executive council that are really most involved. Obviously, there's communication down through the ranks on both sides. But I feel like a lot of people in the game stay in communication and talk about the issues, and it doesn't become completely partisan. It's not as if either side has to toe the party line that there's more an open engagement on the issues, and especially, you know, if you've built up trusting relationships, you can talk about these issues. If you have developed some, you know, the skill of empathy, then you can have productive conversations on these topics with folks on the other side or with folks from different perspectives. And it doesn't have to become, you know, pure lobbying or persuasion or adversarial in any way. So I think you're seeing a lot of that across the game. I mean, 99.9% of people in this game, including me, are you know, feel kind of as spectators in this and just eager to get back on the field. And that's, I think that's where the players are coming from too. And obviously there are important issues at stake and it's very complicated. I'm not trying to minimize the discussions at all, but it's not as if, you know, everyone in the game is dug in on one side or another. We know that there are negotiations going on and, you know, we hope for a resolution that's best for the game of baseball going forward. That's all.
It's clear that George Floyd's death has affected us as a nation. The globalizing of his death has affected all of us. Specifically, it seems to very much affected you, and the way that people respond to it affected you. How did it affect you?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's affected all of us, and that this really feels like an inflection point in our country and in our country's history. And that, you know, it feels different than other galvanizing moments in the past that have seemed like they were the start, the beginnings of a movement, and then have died off as our sort of collective attention span dissipates. You know, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people about why this one feels different or carrying so much weight. I do think, you know, perhaps the fact that with the pandemic, everyone was home with their families, consuming the news. The videotaped evidence in this case is, you know, so stark and undeniable and so tragic and senseless that there's no rationalizing it. There's no explaining it away, and there's no averting your eyes either. There's no turning away from this. And there's no turning away from the fact that this is not, you know, a one-time event. This is the type of thing that we're now seeing periodically. And I was following, it's not just, you know, police brutality either. I was following the Ahmaud Arbery case really closely as well. And obviously Breonna Taylor and all the other cases. So it's just undeniably a pattern at this point, and something that's systemic and institutionalized. And so, you know, it's moved a lot of people, and sometimes you don't know how to react. You don't know what to do. And that's why I think protest is so important. So, you know, there's always one person who protests first, and then others who follow, and then it becomes a movement, and then it becomes there becomes real momentum. So, you know, seeing people take to the streets and seeing people stand up and seeing people raise their voice, it does create a real momentum in the country. And I think what it does is it causes people to take a fresh look at the way things are, because the status quo can, you know, as horrible as it might be, as unjust as it might be, as much institutionalized racism as it might have in it, the status quo is easy to tolerate sometimes, you know, because we get so caught up in our own lives and the way things are that you sometimes don't even recognize it. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said that, you know, institutionalized racism can be like dust particles in the air where you don't even see it. It's all around you, but you don't even see it. And then a little bit of light comes into the room and you realize it's everywhere. Well, I think that's what, you know, the early reaction to the George Floyd murder did for a lot of people is it lit a little bit of light into the room. And so, you know, you do take a moment to look around you with a fresh perspective, with new light in the room, and you realize, you know, this is a time to do something, because It's everywhere. And so the people in the streets are very, very inspirational. And I had a chance to ride my bike down to one of the rallies last week. And, you know, one thing you notice right away is it's people of all races, it's people of all ages. These protests are happening all over the country, not just in big cities, but in rural areas and the Rust Belt and the Bible Belt, all over coast to coast. And then you notice that the young faces around you are the ones who are the most colorblind, you know, and this next generation really has it figured out. It's on us to help pave a better path for them. And if we can't, to get out of their way, you know, because they are creating a more just future for this country. And so it's up to each of us if we want to be part of it.
I think when all of us try to figure some of this stuff out, and we're talking with Theo Epstein here on The Score, we're all looking at it as a big problem. What impressed me with you in particular is that you were introspective in how it was impacting you and how it was impacting the game. So when it came time for you to look at hiring process, the structure of the way that the Cubs are built in a front office standpoint, what were the things that made you kind of take notice and say, perhaps we can find a different way to do things?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, those are the best things you can do initially is listen and then look inside and look inward and look at your own situation. And, you know, for me as a leader in, of this organization and in baseball operations, you have to look at your own decision making and examine that and see if perhaps, you know, you have your own, you know, unconscious biases that exist. And, you know, as a leader, all leaders, whether they like it or not, or whether it's intentional or not, they shape the culture around them. And so the environment of an organization is there in the makeup of an organization, the demographics of an organization, is the responsibility of every leader, whether, you know, whether they like it or not. If you're being honest with yourself, you can impact that. You can take control of it. Your own decision-making, the culture that you help set, defines the environment of the organization. So, you know, if you look at the Cubs, for example, you know, we don't have a representative number of African-American employees, you know, especially for a team in a city like Chicago, but we just don't. And we might be up to major league averages in those areas, but that's nowhere near good enough. And that's part of the problem is that as, you know, now you look a little bit more broadly beyond the Cubs and you look at Major League Baseball and our numbers aren't nearly good enough. You know, we have two African-American heads of baseball operation, two African-American managers, the percentage of scouts, the percentage of front office people, they just all fall well short, not to mention, you know, the percentage of African-American players in the game is under 8% now. So, you know, that stuff doesn't happen by accident. Again, these issues are institutionalized at this point. They're systemic. They're, as I said earlier, they're everywhere, whether you can see them or not. And there's a lot of unconscious bias that goes on. So I just looked at my own decision-making and, you know, I've hired a lot of, you know, African-American people and people from all different races and backgrounds. But, you know, if I'm being honest with myself and in my time at the Cubs, I said the other day, I'm not afraid to say it again. Like, what, you know, there have been a lot of key decisions where I end up hiring someone who looks like me or with a similar background as me. And I think that's, you know, that's a default for a lot of people, and a dangerous default, because you end up falling back on the comfort of the familiar. And when you do that, you don't end up with a diverse enough organization. You do that, you don't end up with diversity of perspective or experience or opinion as well, and you can't be quite as effective that way. So I just thought that needed to be said, because I thought if I called myself out on it, maybe it would, just for a split second, also have, you know, cause others in baseball to take a look inside as well at their own unconscious biases to see if they're there, and see if, you know, collectively we take a moment and try to change.
I really love that you and Kenny Williams are connected on this initiative, and that was one of the people that, you reached out to, because, I mean, his background, you know, how he grew up is really important to this. And I feel like your approach and the way that he goes about things, I think it makes for a dynamite combination, and I'm glad to see that there have been that baseball as a whole has kind of jumped in on this. So where do you think this goes from here inside baseball?
Yeah, I think, you know, the symbolic gesture we made at the draft with the 30 baseball decision makers holding up the placards that said Black Lives Matters and United for Change, and then the donation that we made ended up totaling with the matching over $1 million to five racial justice organizations. That was a really important step, but just the first step. And that's something that we all acknowledge. And I'm really proud of the group of 30 heads of baseball operations. It's hard to get this group to agree on anything. Everyone's in different circumstances within their own organization and at different points in their careers, but everybody was willing to stand up and make that statement. And so in recognizing that as the first step, I think we all agreed to listen to our players, listen to our coworkers with different backgrounds and different perspectives than us, then to look inward and examine whether there are things we can do better, such as try to identify and then eliminate the unconscious biases we have when it comes to hiring, for example. And then that there's plenty of action items that we can work on within the game. There are some great programs already in place that we can support. There's a diversity fellowship through Major League Baseball. They've done terrific work with the Urban Youth Academies and the RBI programs. But usually those have been somewhat separate from baseball operations, and we have, you know, huge baseball operations infrastructures that can support these programs. It doesn't necessarily need to fall to, you know, the community relations programs to do that. But more than anything, I think it's, standing up, speaking out, and being willing to listen, being willing to have the uncomfortable conversations. And that attitude will be reflected in our decision making. It'll be the pursuit of justice, if we can all keep that at the forefront, racial justice, if we can keep that at the forefront of our minds, will be reflected in the environments that we create within our organization as leaders. And then it'll be reflected in the clubhouse too. You know, it's been really disturbing and powerful to hear some of the best players in the game who are African-American speak up recently about being uncomfortable in their own clubhouses. And that's something that we have to all in the game take responsibility for and try to change. I think that starts with our attitudes, and it starts with getting, as Kareem said, getting this out in the light so we can all see it and fix it.
This has obviously been a fairly heavy interview. I would like to lighten it up, because I think everyone in Chicago was ecstatic when they saw that your organization drafted Ed Howard. So what was it about Ed Howard that convinced you that he's someone that you want inside that Cubs organization?
Well, the first thing, I think you start with the human being, and you know, anytime you're taking a chance on a high school kid in the first round, you want somebody that you can trust and somebody with character and with work ethic and with maturity, because it's a long road from being a high school senior to being an impact player in the big leagues. And our scouts did a tremendous job getting to know Ed. He's one of the most mature high school seniors we've ever been around. He's got some of the highest character we've ever been around. His parents did a phenomenal job in raising him. Beyond his parents, he's been, you know, part of some great institutions in the city, from the Jackie Robinson West Little League program, which I've been proud to support through my foundation since 2013, to the White Sox ACE program, which is tremendous work, to Mount Carmel and their great coaching staff and support system there. So, and Ed has been smart enough to take advantage of all those resources and the village around him and put it to good use with unparalleled work ethic to get to the point where he is today. So that was the first thing, is trusting the person. And that was a slam dunk. That was a huge, huge asset that Ed brings to the table. And then, you know, this is a potentially really, really dynamic player and someone we've known for a long time. Obviously, you know, he was came onto the radar screen back in 2013, 2014 with the Jackie Robinson West team and the League World Series. Got to meet him back then when he came to Wrigley, and then even as a high school and high school sophomore, he was out on the field with us for our pre-draft workout playing shortstop against high school seniors, taking ground balls with high school seniors and college juniors. And he stood out. He was the best shortstop on the field that day as a high school sophomore. So he's been on our radar screen a long time. And our scouts just did a great job tracking his progress. And, you know, defensively, he's extremely advanced, great feet, great hands, strong throwing arm, playmaking ability, terrific athlete, very projectable frame. He's 6'2" and has the type of body that we think is going to add strength without losing athleticism as he matures. And then offensively, while like almost every other high school senior, he's got work to do with his swing and his approach going forward as he adds strength. He already hits the ball really hard. You know, he doesn't necessarily have, you know, huge natural launch angle yet, but that's going to come. He's going to learn to get the ball in the air. He's going to learn to get a little bit more direct with his pass, but he already hits the ball really hard. And that bodes well for what he can be with a few small adjustments and just natural development time. So, you know, you got a guy who can stick at a premium position, probably, you know, has a chance to be a plus defender at a premium position, who's a great athlete, who already hits the ball hard, has a lot of, you know, charisma, intelligence, and the kind of character and work ethic that you want to invest in. So we're thrilled that he was there at our pick.
It's crazy seeing that video of you at the rally with him and the camera panning to him as he's smiling when you're talking about drafting them, and he ends up being one of your draft picks. It's a really wonderful story, and I know for a fact that he comes from a great family, so I'm very much looking forward to seeing what happens next. Theo, thank you so much for being gracious with your time and with your truth. I appreciate you being on my show, and continued great work. It's not rare. It's rare that I say this to a guest that's on my show, but I believe in what you talk about. And when I hear you talk, I feel like you're someone that's not just about talk. You're about action. And believe me, that I feel like I speak for a good contingent of people that say that that's appreciated.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think holding people accountable for their words and holding them accountable to make sure they turn those into actions is something that we should all be doing at this point in our history and with a lot of things going on in our country. So I would appreciate you and your listeners holding us accountable to that. You know, we've already at the Cubs, we've already started to work on our diversity committee. Tom Ricketts, Green Kenny, and I, and others in the organization, we've already got nominations going and developing a structure for that and coming up with a charter and setting out goals for the diversity committee. I've been in touch with the top diversity officer at Major League Baseball. So there's a lot that can be done, and we should be held accountable for it as individuals, as an organization here at the Cubs, and then as an institution of baseball. There's a lot of improvements to be made. I look forward to that happening and taking an already great game and making it better.
If I can be of help in any way, don't hesitate to reach out, man.
I appreciate that. All the best.
Be well, Theo. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That is Theo Epstein, the president of baseball operations for your Chicago Cubs. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
That was pretty cool to have Theo on and for him to be as honest as he was talking about a plethora of issues. That's the type of guy that you could talk to for hours. What he was referencing at the beginning of the interview, Theo and I did an event together where I got to talk baseball with him for an hour. Like, we just sat in the Scores performance studio with a group of like 100 people. And I got to talk to him and ask him questions. And always joke that I humble brag, I got accepted to Yale, and had I gone to Yale, I would have been working for Theo at the school newspaper. So I was joking with him about that, and I'm really happy that he's a great representative for the Cubs. And you've heard me talk about this a lot. Like, I feel like anything that's public with the Cubs should go through his filter. And there are plenty of you that are reacting, and Tech Zone is brought to you by our friends over at Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time and shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Theo for POTUS. Let me tell you something. If that guy wanted to run for political office, I don't think that he does. I don't think that that's something that's in him. I think that he would probably prefer to be someone working in the background of someone who's running for public office. But if he did, you got a guy that understands a lot of the dynamics of how this country works and is working towards bettering himself. And that's all people want to see. When we talk about progress, and you know, over the last few weeks, this has been a topic that we've discussed here on the show. No one thinks that all of the problems that our republic has can be fixed immediately. But the things that you look for, the signs of progress that you look for, are people being willing to check their feelings in some cases, to check their privilege in some cases, and to look and say, well, okay, how can I be better? What can I do? I think all of us that are trying to find a way for there to be peace along with the justice are doing that. And whether I'm talking to my white friends who have reached out to me over the last couple of weeks just to check on how I'm doing, and that is super valuable, it's incumbent upon all of us to go, okay, well, what can I do? Like, how can I get better? How can I impact the world in a positive way, or that doesn't support some of the things that have gotten us to this point in the first place? And the reason why I admire a guy like Theo, it would be super easy for him to just ignore everything that's going on. Nobody in baseball has a better resume than that guy. It'd be easy for him to ignore what he's seeing and to live in the status quo, because the status quo for him has been really good. He succeeded. He's won multiple titles in multiple places. But the fact that he is willing to humble himself for the causes of justice, for the causes of diversity, it doesn't mean that he has to have every single answer. And none of my white brothers and sisters, you don't have to have every single answer to the question. You just have to be willing to listen. And if you're smart like Theo, then you can actually come up with ways to help, initiatives to help, by taking in information from people who might have more information on a subject than you do, and then applying it. That's the number one thing when it comes to wanting to be supportive in this. Checking on your friends of color, like, that's a good thing. And now we've broken through that barrier, and now, like, some of the hard work happens. And part of the reason that I was saying that I think it's a really good thing that it's him and Kenny Williams. You got to understand Kenny Williams' background. You got to understand how he was raised. This is a guy that, if you look at his life, and you, if you have a real conversation with Kenny about growing up out west, growing up in and around Berkeley, and what that was like in the 60s and the 70s, you get a great appreciation for all of the things that he's gone through. It's the idea of adding his perspective to some of the things that Theo wants to engage in. Like, to me, that is a dynamite combination. That's where you can get actual change happening inside baseball. And him talking about bias, this is what I've been talking with you about for months. The idea of, did I hire someone who looks like me and thinks like me? And did I do it because they look like me and think like me? Even asking the question is valuable because it means that there's some introspection on your part. And that's where you can start to work to change things. When you get to that, and we'll see. We'll see if baseball front offices start to change. And there's an idea for diversity of thought in this too. It's so funny. Like, if you go back to the, I don't even know if we have time to play it. I'll just summarize it, Herbie. Don't worry about finding it. When we talk with Joe Maddon, after it was announced that he wasn't coming back, and we kind of had our last Joe Maddon show. Subsequently, he's been on the show since then, because that's how me and Joe get down. But he was talking about some of this. Now, he wasn't talking about it from the perspective of race and culture, but he was talking about it from the idea of diversity of thought. And he was talking about it from, well, I mean, I'm a guy that came up through the scouting world. Like, scouting is very important to me. And now he sees front offices that look very similar. It's going to be young, hungry, smart white men who have Ivy League backgrounds.
Analytics, I've talked to you about this, has really created a part of the reason why I don't think people like the game as much anymore, because it's creating the sameness. Every organization is really running off the same sheet of music. Nobody's has their own methods or their own ways anymore, because everybody's drafting the same guys with the same kind of qualities, and they're looking for the same kind of results. And with that, you're seeing this robotic game that really lacks charisma and character and that kind of a method, or like the Angel way or the Cubs way or whatever. And I think that's where the Zags got to come out of. I think if you could at some point still be creative and use analytics purposefully, and then also create this own method for your group to play within, adhering to old school standards and recognizing heartbeats matter. That's where I think the industry has to go to make the game interesting again, from the spectator's perspective, and why you hear all these different things being said and read that I really don't agree with. So, but it's up to us and to me specifically with this group, and I'm really eager. Billy Epler is a great partner to be with. So is Artie, John Carpino, and like I said, alumni out there. And I really want to have an active alumni. I want an active alumni, and I think that's something that baseball is missing out on also. If you don't have an active alumni within your organization, shame on you. But the Cubs do a great job with that. They do. And that's probably why. I've always thought that, but now I really want to make sure that happens with the Angels again.
So him talking about zigging when the rest of baseball is zagging, it's not something that's gone unnoticed, that we're seeing front offices mirror each other. And some of that is just copycat stuff. Like, I don't think that it's sinister. It's, oh, well, that's what Theo was doing back in Boston. And if we go all the way back to the Moneyball days, like, this is where the industry went. Some of it is just, well, we need to find the smartest guys in the room that can do that. And then sometimes that turns into the monsters, i.e. the Houston Astros, where those type of skills end up creating a environment where, well, we're all just kind of pushing the edges of the game out. Why don't we push it in another direction? Why don't we play to the echo of the whistle this way? And then you have one of the biggest scandals that the game has ever seen. Back after this in The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
This segment is being brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Grand Appliance makes appliance shopping easy with a low price guarantee, user-friendly website, extensively trained sales team, and hundreds of models in stock every day. Best of all, you can save an extra 5% on most brands through June 17th. Grand Appliance, trusted since 1930. Danny Parkins is on his own today. He was off yesterday, right? Like, was it, or was that the other day?
No, he was off yesterday.
He was off yesterday, but now he's got to come in here and do a solo show for 4 hours? Well, he's going to be on today, and he's got some help. Phil Rosenthal. Man, did you read Phil Rosenthal's review of Long Gone Summer? Woo! Be listening at 3:30 if you didn't, because Phil didn't like it. I'm looking forward to watching it, and I know that we're going to have a conversation about it, but there seems to be some things that have been conveniently left out that are really important to telling the story of the 1998 season. So Parkins is going to talk with Phil at 3:30. Groats is going to be on. We haven't even talked about Mitchell Trubisky. I feel like we did really good counter-programming with that, though, Herbie. That Mitchell Trubisky was talking, and we were talking to Theo Epstein. I feel like we did a good job.
He's not talking about anything, right?
No, I mean, there's some of the things that we had already assumed. Like, we had assumed that he was upset and that he was going to try to harness that hurt to make himself a better quarterback. And I hope that he's able to do that. I still think that he has a chance to be the starting quarterback of this team. If I were him, I wouldn't be afraid of Nick Foles, but it does seem like the deck is stacked against him. Does that make Mitchell Trubisky better? I don't know. But I'm willing to give him an opportunity to see if he can win the job. I don't know how willing the Bears are going to be in that regard. But of course, but Mitch has been out in these streets too, and I give him credit for that. Mitch went out there with Jason Hayward and Sam Acho trying to talk to people. He's not going to be as loquacious as those guys are on the subject, but I appreciate the starting quarterback of the Bears lending himself to trying to figure out ways that people can get justice. That's a good thing.
The only thing that holds me back from totally getting off the Mitch train is that his teammates love him. And same thing with Matt Nagy. Like, if they say, they don't say one bad word about Mitch. Never, ever. We've heard that from other people talking about Mike Glennon or Jay Cutler even. There's not a bad word usually to be said about Mitch. And, you know, we see the games. There's a lot to be said about Mitch. He's terrible so far. So the fact that the players don't say anything about him, I got some holdout on me.
Here's the thing, though. They're going to love Nick Foles, too. He's like the ultimate teammate guy. So Mitch is fighting a battle in that regard, and the other guy might be better than him at that part of the job. We'll see. We'll talk about it on Monday. The McNeil and Parkins show is coming up next. Park has got Phil Rosenthal at 3:30. I'm going to go and hang out this weekend and be back at noon. Great job by Herb Lawrence. And shout out to Jay Zawoski for his help on getting our Cubs guest today. Have a wonderful weekend. It's supposed to be gorgeous outside. Go and enjoy it. Stay safe. I'll see you Monday at noon here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. We there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.